Just a 60-second review. We looked last week at, we sort of looked at theory, what it was, and what the implications are. That's primarily what we looked at last week. Here was the example, one definition that I used last week to summarize this pictorial right here. Basically, Christ came. The Jews rejected him as the Messiah of the Old Testament because he was rejected unexpectedly. God changed his plan. Instead of the kingdom being started, the church was begun at that period of time. So we are now in the church age. There will come a time when Christ will return. Some look at two returns. The first return being when the rapture takes place. That's when all of the saved are going to be raised up. And then some say the second return later, but there will be a 7-year tribulation period during which the worship, although altered, will be reinstated, the temple rebuilt, the physical temple in Jerusalem. Be a conflict for 3.5 years. Then they see Armageddon, which is a worldwide conflict, an actual world war, a physical world war, with the allies of Israel and Israel against all the other nations of the world. Israel, of course, is going to be successful in that war. Then begin the 1,000-year reign of Christ on earth on a physical throne, a throne of David in the city of Jerusalem, for literal 1,000 years. After that period of time will be judgment and eternity. So we cover that in more detail, more time. We simply pointed out a lot of commonly accepted, certain Seventh-day Adventists, the Witnesses, Southern Baptists, both religious people. Spend some time talking about the apostasy within the Lord's Church. Getting in Kentucky, spreading to southern Indiana, Missouri, during the 1920s, 30s, 40s. Still there. There are still people today who hold these views, calling themselves Church of Christ. So it's not something that has gone away. Look, a lot of implications. I'm just going to, you can read these. We talked about these Sunday morning. But they're very serious implications. That I studied this, and this really became the basis for your homework for next Sunday. Study, there are a lot of thoughts. Some of you presented some good thoughts and passages really address many of these implications. If this theory is true, here are some things that necessarily implied. And so a lot of Bible passages began going through your mind, I'm sure, Sunday morning. Well, that's true. Here's what the Bible says. So we see a lot of conflicts. So we looked at the implications on Sunday morning. Brings us to where we're at tonight. We're going to focus tonight on Revelation chapter 20. Thought a lot about how you cover Revelation 20 in a meaningful way. And I decided to approach it in a way that if I were confronted with a neighbor and talk, and they were premillennial, they took me to Revelation chapter 20 and said, well, here's what it said, it'd be a 1,000-year reign. How would I answer that question? And the more I thought about that, it became apparent to me that the way I think I would answer that question, context. Literally, what they do, they take a phrase, not even a whole chapter, they take a phrase out of context. I think it's only when you lead somebody to understand what the book is about and lead them to Revelation 20, they have any hope of really understanding what Revelation 20 is all about. We need, through our study, understand how important context is. Literally, Satan out of context, even our daily conversations, you can make somebody say practically anything. Folks called politicians are good at that, right? They make somebody say something they didn't really say because they take something out of context. So what I want to do tonight, I want to start and take just a few minutes looking at what the book of Revelation says, and I want to lead us up to Revelation chapter 20. Now, there are a number of people in this class that studied that with us here about a year, year and a half ago. Several of you in that class. But I don't think you can ever go back and review this too often. At least I can't. There's always a benefit. So that's the approach we're going to take this evening, and I trust it will be profitable for us. When we look at Revelation 20, that is the primary proof text. They have others we're going to look at. But for the most part, that's what they look at. So as we look at the book of Revelation, chapter 1 begins, you recall, with the revelation of Jesus Christ to John, signified to him as the book opens. Means it's a book of signs and symbols. We have to keep that in our mind as you look at what is said in Revelation chapter 20. You look, that is, to a great, great extent, written in signs and symbols. The book opens with Christ being revealed to the Apostle John as the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. The one who had died and yet lives forever. more. Galatians chapters 2 and 3, you're introduced today to the immediate audience. I use the word immediate. The book of Revelation is for us yet today. Yet the immediate audience identified as the seven churches of Asia. They're in chapters 2 and 3. Then was given, I think, primarily words of encouragement. Though in this present age of conflict, they would be victorious in Christ Jesus. We're also in that you're familiar with some warnings that are issued to them. This was given to John and seated on the Isle of Patmos. But it then continues with God being introduced in the beginning of the book on His throne. A very key point as we look at Revelation, because it says that God is in control. What better assurance to give the recipients of this letter in the very beginning than the assurance is God's in control. They were living in a period of time when Domitian or Nero may have been in control and was in control of their daily lives, holding the power of life and death very literally. Here's the assurance in the beginning that God is on His throne. God is omnipotent. He controls all things. Followed by the presentation of Christ in chapter 5 as the worthy Lamb, worthy to go forward and take the book out of the hand of the strong angel and reveal all the contents of God's plan for mankind. So we see Him as the worthy Lamb, the Lion of Judah, chapter 5. So there we saw Christ introduced in chapter 1, reintroduced in a different light in chapter 5, as this worthy Lamb. The word Lamb then becomes significant as you continue through the book. Then you see the seven seals begin to open. Book of Revelation, you get the seals, the trumpets, bowls of wrath, not independent, they're very much related. Best way to look at this, I believe, is that the seals reveal what's going to happen. Trumpets then sound a warning. If I told you, here's what I reveal to you, the seven trumpets then sound the warnings of what is about to happen. Seven bowls of wrath simply execute what was revealed and that about which they received the warning. So I don't think you're looking at three different pageantries taking place in the book of Revelation. You're looking at one. The seals reveal, the trumpets warn, the bowls of wrath execute God's judgment. Seven seals are open and primarily reveal victory for the Lamb, introduced in chapter 5, and for God's faithful servants. Primary message of the book is that of victory. Embedded in that message must be the defeat of their enemies. If you go to war, you cannot be victorious yourself unless your enemies are destroyed and overcome. Certainly see it's a book of victory for the faithful. Embedded in that is judgment upon the enemies of the Lamb and God's faithful. We're looking for in the book a judgment for Satan and his allies, followed by the seven trumpets that warn of the impending judgments of God upon the enemies of the Lamb and God's faithful servants. We have a period of the book then that expressly states that these are going to be ignored and even embedded into some of these chapters. Trumpets introduced, they are ignored by those who are unregenerate, those who are wicked. By sound warnings, they're ignored. Comes as no surprise to a Bible student as the minor prophets, major prophets written to the people of Israel, were they received there by Israel for the most part? No, they were rejected. So if the Bible student is not a surprise that these warnings of God, a call to repentance, were also rejected. Finally, the battlefield has been drawn. And you see in you come to chapter 12, here's the battlefield. And again, you find not new characters, but you see characters introduced again in a different light in chapter 12. Now you see the dragon, who is Satan, Abaddon, the Apollyon, all descriptions of Satan used in the book of Revelation. It's a warfare between dragon and the man-child. And as you look at chapter 12, the man-child is the Christ. Here is this battle between Christ and Satan. Dragon is Satan, the Abaddon. You're introduced, especially as you come to chapter 13, very clearly to these beasts. The first beast is mentioned. I believe this is the Roman Emperor and the persecuting emperors during the first century. second beast is also presented in chapter 13 as being that arm of the Roman government that carries out the wishes of the first beast. Chapter 13 is very key as you come to the latter part of chapter 13 because some of that language is used in chapter 20. And we talk about who is it going to reign 1,000 years. Well, for one part, it's those who did not bow down and worship the beast, those who refused to receive the mark of the beast in chapter 13. Chapter 13 begins, is very key in helping us understand what chapter 20 is all about. This conflict is clearly defined here in chapter 12, and these are some key facts right here about the first beast and the second beast. We've had the seals revealed, we've had the trumpets sound a warning. Now God follows through. God is not one to give idle threats. So now this pageantry continues across the stage. We now see the bowls of wrath being poured out upon the enemies of the Lamb and God's faithful servants. Now as the book continues, you come into chapter 16 and 17, you see the fall of Rome and great Babylon. The same language is used here that was used of Babylon of old. Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. Characterized the nation, the city of Rome. Now notice that we said in the very beginning is the book of encouragement, right? But Rome, the city of Rome, personified all that was oppressing them. So here is the judgment of God upon Rome in these chapters, provide the hope and assurance of victory for God's faithful servants. They're in control now, but that's going to change. God is bringing them into judgment. And so we see this as the first judgment. Victory over Satan and his allies, immediate allies, being the first beast and second beast, culminates then with a notice of their eternal destruction, lake of fire. Now, it's not taking place at that moment in time. Notice that in chapter 1, heaven was opened up, the Apostle John was allowed to look into the future, because Christ, as the only Lamb, was able to take that book, was able to break the seal, and reveal all the contents of what God's plan was. John is simply seeing all that is going to take place. It does not mean that it happened at that moment in time. That's sort of a quick summary in the book of Revelation, but very key to our understanding. Now let's back up a little bit and look at some key passages that we really have to look at a little more closely for understanding Revelation chapter 20. I mentioned, it's not on the chart, but Revelation 13. I mention that because it identifies the first and second beast as those who oppress God's people. Those who try to force God's people to worship the beast. Chapter 13, it says, and those who consent him out were put to death. So it tells you how oppressive it was during this period of time. But the sixth bowl of wrath is poured out upon a dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, which is the second beast. In this book, these two are interchangeable, the false prophet and the beast. Again, it's that part of the Roman government seated in the city of Pergamum. That was the seat, we learned back in Revelation chapter 2. That was the enforcement of the emperor worship. Now, we noted before in previous studies, much of this you see in secular history. We look at the Bible because its record is 100% accurate. Many of the things that you read certainly can be fortified by a study of secular history, of what took place during this period of time. So what we're seeing here, dragon is Satan, the great deceiver, the first beast of Roman emperor, we saw before, and the persecuting emperor, the second beast is a Roman consilia, arm that was responsible for a Christian bowing the knee to Caesar, as opposed to maintaining allegiance and faithfulness to Christ. Now, the beast and the false prophet were oppressed of the saints in the first century. Again, we're leading up Revelation chapter 20. Try to understand when you come to chapter 20, what's taking place thus far? Who were the warnings for? What's the book all about? That's why these passages are so key in our understanding and explaining to somebody what chapter 20 is all about. So in our study, I really think our challenge in dealing with premillennial doctrine in chapter 20 really is backing up and understanding this book, what the message is all about, because then we can address contextually what happened in chapter 20. Chapter 16 certainly is very key in our understanding. Chapter 16, it talks about place of Armageddon, or spelled HR, simply denoting a hill. It was a hill of Megiddo. Most would translate this Armageddon instead of Armageddon, same place. Now this is introduced here in Revelation chapter 16. I notice it's introduced as the sixth bowl of wrath is poured out upon the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet. That's the judgment. So that's key, because as the premillennialists look at Armageddon, they've got it much later in time. They believe that we are now premillennial period, right? It hasn't happened yet. They believe the Armageddon is that something that's yet to come. Must lead them to an understanding that when this sixth bowl of wrath was poured out, this where Armageddon is mentioned in the book of Revelation, chapter 16. Not associated with the events, even in chapter 20, that we'll get to in just a little bit, when Satan is finally judged by God and destroyed eternally. It's not even in chapter 20. Without going into a lot of detail here, from a historic standpoint, certainly a great battle site. But when the book opens, it says that these things were signified to John, right? It's a book of symbols. So how does God use this battlefield in Revelation? Physical place, right? A physical place of geographic importance. Something that is just a symbol. This is a place where many great battles were fought. So as with much of the imagery of the Old Testament, we're going to look at some of Ezekiel 38 and 39 later this evening. Much of the imagery is drawn from the Old Testament scriptures. Here is just a simple example of that. Here is a great battlefield. A battlefield has been drawn, identified as Armageddon. Symbolic place where a spiritual battle is going to take place, not a physical battle. This is the symbol that's used, but it's key to recognize that it's associated with the beast and the false prophet. Now, if in your mind you say, well, how do I show somebody that this is talking about the days of the Roman Empire? May not get that tonight, but certainly will Sunday morning. I think it's pretty easy to take just a handful of scriptures. I think you can, without great difficulty, show somebody who is somewhat open-minded, lead them to understanding that certainly these events are taking place during the days of the Roman Empire. So we're doing that at the very latest Sunday morning. Again, chapter 16 is very key. Because this is where Armageddon is mentioned. Quite such a key passage. Another key passage is chapter 19. Now, we all understand the Bible verses. There were no chapter divisions, right? So, chapter 19 flows right into chapter 20. Chapter 19, the first 10 verses, simply a passage of victory. A victory for what? That's a continuation of the celebration that the city of Rome has fallen. Chapter 17 and 18, Rome has fallen. And so, we come to chapter 19, here is the hallelujahs, the victory of this judgment that God has brought upon Rome. Remind ourselves again. Who was the immediate audience? Seven churches. What was happening? They were being oppressed. Who was Antipas? I remember.
Faithful martyr.
A faithful martyr. How many faithful martyrs in Revelation do we know by name? By name. By names we know of people in Revelation who were martyred. One, all right? Remember Antipas. My watchword a year ago when we studied the book. If you remember nothing else, remember Antipas. Only martyr mentioned by name. So God gave that to us. Now, Revelation 19, notice that's a victory, and it's a victory that God's judgment came. Now, what this victory is all about, Luke chapter 19, is that the blood of the servants has been avenged. Go back to Revelation 6, 9 through 11. There you have the martyred saints, those who were put to death. Somebody recently read out of Fox's Book of Martyrs. I forget who that was. Had some good references out of that book. It's an excellent book because it's accepted as being historically accurate. But it noted many of the people who were put to death during this period of time. So here are some of these martyrs, and their question is, how long until what happens in Revelation 6? What's the question, Greg? How long until our blood is avenged, until God brings His judgment? They were ready to be avenged, much like we would be. God, why don't you judge? Why do you let this go on? Much like it reflects back to Habakkuk chapter 1. The prophet Habakkuk said, God, I don't understand. Why are you letting this continue as is? Look at the unfaithfulness of God's people. So even here, they're saying, well, how long do we have to wait until our brother's avenged? The answer was what? While till more of your brethren suffer the same ill. That is, more Christians are going to be put to death. That's the response coming back to Revelation chapter 6. In a very key passage here. What's the book about? It's assurance. Yes, you're suffering. Yes, many are being put to death. It's coming a time you're going to be avenged. A key statement here, I am a common servant with thee and with thy brother that hold the testimony of Jesus. Those of you in my class we emphasize this point. Seen repeatedly in the book, associated with those who were faithful martyrs. It's important because we see this in Revelation chapter 20. So another little tidbit that we sort of got to tie together to lead us to a proper understanding of Revelation chapter 20 as we help others understand what that chapter is all about. Now the main part of chapter 19, judged with the beast and the false prophet. By name, they're called the beast and the false prophet. It reminded the false prophet the same as the second beast back in chapter 13. Now, remember that in chapter 16, the sixth bowl of wrath was poured out, and those affected included the beast and the false prophet. Well, in this section of chapter 19, Jesus is presented as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He comes forward to judge and make war. Now, this is very key right here. When Christ returns, as we understand what the Scriptures teach, is He coming to make war? According to Acts 17, what's He coming to do, Joe? Pass judgment. There's another key word in understanding what chapter 20 is all about. In chapter 19, He comes to judge and to make war. Not the end of time. Chapter 19 is not talking about the final judgment. He's not coming to make war then. He's coming to make war now against the enemies of the saints and against the enemies of the Lamb. The beast rises up in a futile attempt to battle Christ. As is presented here in chapter 19, then the beast and the false prophet are cast into the lake of fire. Here is the judgment. What you see thus far, we see that Rome is judged by God. Now the beast and the false prophet are judged. Thrown into the lake of fire. Now we come to chapter 20. That understanding. Revelation 20 is a proof text for premillennialism. Now the first thing you notice that here are some key things that are not found in Revelation 20. These are not in this chapter. Second coming, the bodily resurrection. Reign of Christ on earth, the literal throne of David. Ruth of Palestine, converted to the Jews. All implications, and then we put more on the list. These are some key things that are not mentioned in the book of Revelation. Chapter 20, which is the proof text for this doctrine. Another key point is, we've got to understand literal versus figurative. We introduced the study tonight in Revelation chapter 1. These things were signified to John. It's a book of symbols and signs. So it is a figurative book. A premillennialist say, yes, it's figurative. It's a figurative key, a figurative abyss, a figurative chain, a figurative dragon. And yet when they come down to 1,000 years, what do they say? The literal 1,000 years. So there's a gross inconsistency. And they do damage this text with that inconsistency. There's another very, very key point. Basic tenets are not in Revelation 20. Only one little piece of this they pull out and say it's a literal 1,000 years. Game with the keys, the abyss, the chain, the dragon, they say all that is figurative. See an inconsistency here. That was the message of Revelation chapter 20. Here's how I summarize it. Ultimate assurance of that God's faithful servants will be victorious. That the enemies of the Lamb will be judged and destroyed. The ultimate answer to the question back in Revelation chapter 6. How long till you avenge our blood? Revelation 20 provides the answer. There is going to be the ultimate. So the judgment of Rome in chapter 17 and 18. The judgment of the beast and false prophet in chapter 19. But yet that's not done, right? Still one left. Now the greatest one is left, right? I'm a fan of old westerns. And you watch old westerns, the good guy, he can take care of 20 bad guys, but as long as the leader's there, what happens, Harold? Bad guys keep coming, right? Because you get the same leader. So, as long as he's in the way, it still exists, the danger's still there. So, chapter 20, reserved for chapter 20, is the assurance of the judgment, the final, ultimate, and eternal judgment of the dragon who has plagued God's people throughout this book. And that is, I think, the message of Revelation chapter 20. Been reserved
the judgment of Satan only is reserved for chapter 20. Other judgments have already taken place. Here you come into chapter 20, first three verses, find that Satan is bound for 1,000 years. Does it say that Satan is helpless, Scott? It says he's bound, right? It says he's bound or his power is limited. So many verses come to mind. Hebrews chapter 2. Till the coming of Christ, Satan held in his power what? The fear of?
Fear of death.
Fear of death. Right? Is that true today, Eric? No, Christ overcame that through his death. Now, the power of Satan was certainly negated when Christ was raised from the tomb on the third day. So Satan is bound, but he's not powerless. 1 Peter 5, chapter 8 tells us what? Born alive, walked by Satan who devour, right? He's still very much alive and active. We're warned about Satan. Doesn't mean he's not out there, he's not active. But it says he's bound, his control is limited. Writers of old have used the illustration many times, a dog on a chain, right? Are you close enough? The dog's going to what? The dog's going to bite you. But whose decision is that? That's mine. The proverb says a fool is likened to a man that takes a mad dog by the jaws, right? Well, if I do that, I'm a fool. I've made that decision. Here with mine, Satan is bound. He can't overcome the power of Christ. He can't overcome the victory that we can have in Christ Jesus. We can relinquish that. We can give him that power. Jesus in Matthew 4, when he was tempted, he could have given the devil power, right? What would have had to have done? Turn the stone to bread. Jump off the pinnacle temple. Say, yeah, I'll take all these kingdoms. He could have relinquished his power, but did not. We say. So here we find that the allies of this present conflict are destroyed. That's the beast and the false prophet. Destroyed. Number 1,000, we don't have a lot of time to talk about numbers. Number 10, it talks in the scriptures, Revelation notwithstanding, a complete period of time. Maybe indefinite, but there's a full period or complete period of time. You have not known a man, certainly known to God. Here's a period of time. So, in keeping with the symbology of the Old Testament and New, and all the numbers, not a literal number, it says back in Psalms that God has a cattle on how many hills? 1,000 hills. What about in the world, are there more than 1,000 hills, you think? What about the cattle on the other hills? Does God not own them? It's a symbol, alright? So we understand that very easily with a passage like that. So we've got to use those verses to help people understand the use of numbers in the Old Testament and New, especially symbolically. Now they cast in the abyss. Something in the abyss of Luke chapter 8, 31. Why did the swine not want to be cast out? They want to go back into the abyss, right? Get a fear of that abyss. And so the evil spirits in the swine that want to be cast out go through the abyss. Some think the same abyss. Again, now, it's important to remember, he's not in the abyss as punishment. Punishment is yet to come. That's at the end of the chapter, or the middle part of the chapter, verse 10. But it's a constraint. He's in the abyss as a constraint. Now, the end of the 1,000-year period, I believe, coincides with this ultimate destruction of Satan. Don't believe you're talking about several different 1,000-year periods that are different in this chapter. Read from believe it's the same 1,000-year period. Right? So bear that in mind. Here are the first three verses. The verses 4 through 6. Subject is a reign of these martyred saints and those who have not worshipped the beast. Back to Revelation chapter 13. That's why that verse is so important. Now, to lead a student from Revelation 13 now back to Revelation 20, well, who's this talking about? Not somebody way, way in the future talking about those saints of the first century. That's the application we've got to see in Revelation chapter 20. Talks about thrones. Here simply designating honor. Now we see that judgment is rendered. It says that these saints have judgment. Are saints ever given judgment in this sense? In this sense. I think here, this is the judgment they have in their hand. Is that judgment finally handed to them by God, rendered on their behalf? Here's the answer, Revelation chapter 6, verse 10. How long will my master hold in truth? Does thou not judge and avenge our blood? This is the judgment they now have in their hands, as we see in this chapter. Now here they reign with Christ during 1,000 years. There's our proof text. Reign with Christ for 1,000 years. Talk to premillennial. Well, who is this? Who reigns? Well, they do. Well,
Who's they? You ever had those conversations? Well, they said it, right? If that same very nebulous they reign, well, to lead a premillennialist to understand Revelation 20 and premillennialism, you've got to get down to bring the answer. But who is this? What is the answer at? Book itself. Answer to Revelation chapter 20 or in the book of Revelation. And that all not to surprises. It's in the text itself. We don't have it anywhere else. I haven't picked up my New Testament and gone any other New Testament passage tonight. Haven't gone back to the Old Testament except for a couple of references of symbology. They end the book of Revelation and lead somebody to an understanding of Revelation chapter 20, and you can deal with premillennialism with Revelation. Then we notice here it's the same period, of same thousand-year period, no reason to believe. Different period of time. We do notice this, a triumph is often noticed as a resurrection. Best example, Ezekiel 37, verse 1 through 14, the valley of dry bones. Who is that talking about? Talking about Israel, right? Here's Israel being restored, one of the restoration passages back in the book of Ezekiel. Well, this is their triumph and victory is spoken of as a resurrection. I believe it may well be. That's why this language is used in this passage, Revelation chapter 20. Here's a triumph, here's a victory of these faithful Christians who had laid their life in line and been martyred during this period of time. They have no fear of the second death. In Revelation chapter 20, in just a moment, is the final eternal destruction. Well, then you come to verses 7 through 10. Now we find that Satan is loose and cast into the lake of fire. Now we know he was going to be loose, but back up in verse 3, it says he'd be cast in the abyss, he would be loose for a little time. Alright, a little time. Now we know it that sort of quantified back in verse 3. I think if you look at this, in my mind, what I see, it's almost like there's supposed to be a big fight, right? A big heavyweight bout. Here they come out from the corners. They walk in the middle of the ring, boom, one punch and it's done. That's what I see here in this passage. As though God is presenting, it looks very ominous, right? Satan is allied, Gog and Magog, they surround the faithful. It says they encompass the camp of God's people. It says, well, it looks hopeless. How can we possibly survive? Then all of a sudden, Acts chapter 4. Revelation chapter 4 tells us what? God is in control. Jeremiah 18 tells us what? By the nations. God is in control. Romans chapter 13 tells us. The powers that be, God is in control, right? The scriptures are replete with passages that show us that God is in control. Now, wow, God and Magog, this must be Armageddon. Well, do not let this equate that, because there's no way they can do that. Armageddon was back in what chapter? Chapter 16. Dealing specifically with the beast and false prophet. Sunday morning, that links us back to the Roman Empire. Do not allow them to make that point. That's where they're going to go, right here. Gog and Magog, we go back to Ezekiel 38, 39, mentioned there. Gog is there, presented as a prince of Magog. Does anywhere in Ezekiel 38, 39 tell us what nations these are? Specifically, does it say it's Assyria? Does it say it's Babylon? Does it say it's Egypt? No. Ezekiel uses Gog and Magog as those as representative of all the enemies of Israel. I believe at that point in time, Ezekiel is a restoration prophet. Looking forward to Israel being restored. Take a look at Ezekiel 38, 39 and see a messianic fulfillment of that. And it may well be there. A little bit tough. Ezekiel's a difficult book. Especially chapter 38, verse 16. Thing to be symbolic of the enemies of saints at the present time, because that's how it's used by Ezekiel back in chapter 38, 39. Here, simply using this symbolic language, Gog and Magog, as the enemies of the faithful servants of God. At a moment in time, it looks like they're encompassing, surrounding God's people, all hope is lost. Satan is cast like a fire. As I said earlier, until you get the ringleader, they're still feared. All have been judged. All of the enemies of God's people sent in the book of Revelation have been judged except for Satan. That's reserved for Revelation chapter 20. Here's the ultimate assurance of victory. Roman's gone, the emperors are gone. But here's the assurance that Satan is also going to be judged. It's presented as being in the abyss, as being restrained. Now we see the ultimate victory over Satan. Cast into the lake of fire. See in chapter 20, verse 14, the event of which is the second death. This second death We saw earlier in the chapter, these 1,000 have no fear of the second death. Well, they've already been redeemed. That's the message of Revelation chapter 20. All right, what time is it here? Great clarifications. Something I may have missed. Anyway, I want you a great opportunity. Angel.
Look in chapter 19. Of Armageddon, the always world army in Christ with the sword coming out of his mouth. Literal, you have to be funny. You only see.
All right, good point. Other comments?
Time period, there's really only the time you have, the time period.
Yeah. Great.
I was just going on my faith. I was just thinking about that. That's in the 3.5 years.
Revelation always depicts a fine period of time. We'll maybe take a look at that Sunday morning. We'll have a couple minutes. Go back to the book of Daniel. You find the same time, half the time, the book of Daniel. And in chapter 7, you find a specific reference to the saints, which I think leads us very clearly back to the book of Revelation as a secondary passage. All right? Sunday morning, we're going to look at the implications. You've seen the list we looked at last Sunday morning. You've got it committed to memory. So, again, be thinking about what are some passages that just seem to be contrary to some of the implications if you take that approach. Think about Daniel 2. Now, think about this diagram between now and Sunday. Look back at Isaiah 2, Joel 2, Daniel 2, Hosea 2. All point forward to what? To Acts chapter 2. What happened to Acts chapter 2? In Pentecost, right? We believe what was established in Pentecost?
Church
and kingdom. Right, that's what we're looking for. Which are, we understand it's synonymous. All these shall look forward. Here's somebody that says the kingdom is coming. Acts 2. Peter said, period in Joel 2, this is that which was spoken of by the prophet Joel, quoting Joel 2. The interesting is, what verb tense we see out here? Verb tense. All right, it's tomorrow, it's going to happen. I come to Ephesians 2, Colossians 2, and Hebrews 2, well-known passages that talk about the church. Now you're looking at past tense. It's just a powerful graphic. Me, I saw it many, many years ago. The first time I saw something similar to this is in Paul Wallace's book, God's Prophetic Word. Always got my attention. I said, wow, I can easily look at it. Now, is this divine? They're all twos? No, it's not divine. It just so happens in my people mind. This age, that's an easy way to just sort of keep track of the fact that when I look at any prophecy, it points forward. But after Acts 2, it always looks back every time. Not find a verse after Acts 2 that's looking forward, always looking back. All right, very good. We'll pick up here Sunday morning.